This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751, or send in your question through the website www.beatyourgenes.org. So today's topic is actually the psychology behind what's humorous, what's funny. Whenever I think about the psychology of humor, I'm reminded of Christopher Hitchens. And he was on air, he was doing an interview, and the interviewer asked him about comedy, and he said that men are much funnier than women. So of course the interviewer was really upset about this, and he said, well, no, let me tell you why. He said, because men are much more motivated to be funny, because if they succeed, they're going to get a date out of it at the least.
Right.
So we're going to be talking about the psychology of humor. We're going to be kind of dissecting an article today by a website called The Week. It's just called How to Be Funny: The 6 Essential Ingredients to Humor. Now, the author, Eric Barker, he's not a psychologist, so he did the best that he could. Yeah. But we're going to be dissecting this from a professional standpoint and your perspective to see what is actually true and what isn't true.
All right.
So, but before we start, any couple of things you want to say about humor and the psychology of being funny?
Well, there's a lot to it, actually. So there's probably a lot of different things we could discuss, but Hitchens was certainly correct that men are designed to generate humor, and women are designed to enjoy it. And so it's and of course, I can see, you know, some annoyed women out there already if they ever listen to this. But this is the truth, that it's a mechanism by which females judge males. It's a fitness indicator. We're not exactly sure what the females are discerning here when it comes to the humor, but there's certainly creative intelligence is involved. And also probably mutation loads are being analyzed by how humor is quite a complex psychological event. So to be able to generate humor is no simple trick, and therefore there are people that are lousy at it, people that are okay at it, and then there's people that are outstanding at it. So just like athletics or anything else that is difficult, it winds up being a potentially useful indicator of genetic fitness or mutation loads. And so therefore men are very motivated to try to generate this, and turns out that if you look at studies about sense of humor and who finds what attractive, you will find the following asymmetrical situation. And that is that men are found more attractive when they are funny, but they are not found more attractive when they are amused. Whereas women are not found more attractive when they are funny, but they are found more attractive when they are amused. So this tells us that men like it when women laugh, in particular at anything that they have to say, and women like it are not so interested in whether men find them funny. They're more interested in whether the men are funny themselves. So this is a device that men try to sell their genes to women, and that is the evolutionary backdrop of humor. So with that in mind, let's press on and see what the pop culture has to say about it.
All right. Yeah. You know, and I always thought that humor had something to do with intelligence, although not necessarily. A lot of the people that I've met who just are aspiring comedians or just pretty good at comedy,
they tend to be pretty intelligent.
Yeah.
They can think through things pretty quickly and come up with
right.
something on the fly and say something that is desirable for others to hear.
Yes, it would be the equivalent of in athleticism, like if you are pretty good with a bow and arrow, that would be a fitness indicator, kind of a particular one. You know, can you hold real steady? Are you strong enough to draw the bow back? You know, what's your eyesight like? All these kinds of things. Like, it's not bad. Now, it's not as good as the decathlon, for God's sakes. It's not as good as basketball, but it's better than nothing. And
mm-hmm.
so sense of humor is like a bow and arrow. It's a person can be actually very witty and not that smart. But a person could easily be very smart and not that witty. So it's not just an intelligence indicator, although it is correlated with intelligence. It's also indicative of some other things, of cooperativeness, for example, because a good sense of humor it generally enables you to see multiple sides of a situation, and which is not going to be typically that easy if you're like a very disagreeable kind of a human.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the case that humor also signals that you are motivated to pursue a relationship with the person that's listening. So it's actually flattering to listen to someone trying to be funny, because they're essentially trying to get into a social relationship or a romantic relationship with you. They are going to that effort. And so it's also a signal of social interest. So there's quite a number of lines of influence and analysis that are going on with a sense of humor, which, of course, is not the slightest bit funny to listen to this analysis. So let's go on with the pot people. They have to say. Let's hear what the real people have to say instead of that.
I was going to say, tell that to some of the people I've tried to tell jokes to, and eventually after a minute of me stuttering and umming and ahhing, they say, just stop.
Yeah, just forget it.
All right, here
All
we
right.
go. So the author is Eric Barker, and the article is How to Be Funny, the Six Essential Ingredients to Humor. So we're going to play six different clips, one at a time, and then describe what is the element that's displayed here. So our first clip is from Louis C.K., he's a famous comedian, and it's an example of you having a target. So the number one thing is to have a target, and let's listen in on our first comedian here.
Like when you're 40, if you go to the doc, guess what? They don't try to fix anything anymore. They stop trying to fix shit. When you get to be 40, they just go, yeah, it starts to happen. They don't care. I went to the doctor because my ankle hurt, right? Now, if you're 20 and you have a bad shoulder, the doctor will reconstruct your shoulder through miracles of modern science. He'll take your ear and make a shoulder out of it. It's weird. But when you're 40, they just give you no options. They don't care. I went because my ankle, like I was limping for like a month out of nowhere. And the doctor, he brings me and he shows me an x-ray of my ankle. He's like, yeah, your ankle's just worn out.
So in this case, the target is the doctor. What
yeah,
say you, Dr.
A little
Lyle?
Bit. Yeah, not quite. The target is also him. And if you actually look at the funniest laugh in that sequence, it wasn't that funny until the doctors talked to him about your ankle's worn out, i.e. at 40, you're over the hill. So actually what you heard was, at first it starts out in this vague target that we're targeting the medical doctor. That's the first little pot shots there. But the audience didn't find it that funny. If you listen to this, the biggest laugh is at the end by far. And what makes that funny is the fact that this guy is up there. Listen to him. He's very articulate. He's very bright. And he's got a big audience there, so he's got a lot of status. And trust me, that makes a lot of men uncomfortable. So guys are there with their girlfriends and their wives, and this guy is got a lot of status. And so therefore, we are actually wanting him to lose status. And so when he says the crack about that his doctor says, well, your ankle's wore out, i.e., you're over the hill, you're 40, that is a the rich humor there is that the guy up there is losing the status, and that's what makes that joke funny.
Okay, so it's not the target. Yeah. So he's actually the target here. There's not really a target here per se. He's always going to be the target, and the goal for this is to take status away from himself.
That's correct. That is exactly what's happening there. Yeah, good.
Okay.
All right.
All right, second part is another part of humor is hostility. And this is Lewis Black. He's the king of comic hostilities, where he gets really angry.
Yes.
And this is in regards to shopping for milk at the supermarket.
Right. You don't know anymore. And a lot of you were sitting there thinking, fuck, I'm an adult. I don't have to drink that shit anymore. When I was a kid, you knew milk was good because there was only one kind of milk, moo cow fuck milk, and that was it. And you had to drink 4 glasses a day. Now you don't know, because when you go down the aisle of the grocery store, the milk aisle goes on for fucking ever. There's 1%, 2% low fat, skim, acidophilus milk. What the fuck are you talking about? Acidophilus milk? Milk doesn't need a friend. That shit belongs in the yogurt section.
All right, so he's hostile because he's confused.
Yeah, that's interesting. His biggest laugh is with profanity by far, and it's about his own frustration. And so it's I think that is I actually believe that once again the target is him. And so the frustration that you're seeing there in principle that the world is now too confusing for him. That he once again, here we are, we have a guy in front of a big audience. And he obviously successful, but what he's going to do is he's going to act like the world's a little too confusing for me. I'm just a good old boy. Remember when you were a kid, it was simple and I could understand it when I was a kid. But now that I'm an adult, oh God, there's just so much going on, you know, i.e. then we're going to use the profanity, which is actually a signal of the degree of his frustration. And so what this really is, this is a very interesting humor in that it's not very elegant, but it's effective. It's basically saying, hey, man, this is too hard for me. And what makes things funny in life is that what makes it – if there was actually a borderline retarded person up there telling that story, it wouldn't be the slightest bit funny. Okay, because that individual could not afford to lose that status. So what causes things to be funny is that when somebody of high status can afford to lose status and then does it in a way that seems true. In other words, it's hitting, it appears that they're really losing the status, but it's status that is very affordable. So in the first case, the guy is obviously, as I'm listening to the guy, I don't know how old the first guy was, but he sounds vibrant. In other words, this is a vibrant guy, good voice. So he turned 40. He didn't say he turned 70. He's 40. So this is an alpha male really in his prime. And the alpha male in his prime is admitting that the doctor says that his ankle's all worn out, i.e. there's no way to fix it. You're just too old. This is a beautiful, obviously he's not too old to screw. Obviously he's not too old to go up and grandstand in front of a bunch of attractive females. And so as a result, this is status that he can afford to lose, but it is a relief inside the nervous systems of both the males and the females. If you're a female who might consider him, you would be intimidated by the fact that he is so fancy, that he's up on the big stage. But, oh, if he has a flaw and he can see that he should be getting the signal that he's over the hill, that is a relief because he's now not so fancy and he may be attainable. And for the males, it's a relief that he is that he's not so fancy and that he's, you know, that he's maybe getting past it. Okay, so this is what I call faux status. So in the first case, he lost faux status behind his knee or his ankle being, i.e., he's getting old. And in the second case, this comedian is saying, I'm kind of dumb, okay? That's actually the underlying the edge to this humor. And he uses a profanity behind the shock value of it because it's indicating frustration. It turns out that when people get frustrated, they swear. We're not exactly sure why this is. There's some multiple different hypotheses about that, but one of the hypotheses is that it is actually difficult not to swear, and so therefore, when you get frustrated, you lose stress tolerance, and then the profanity emerges. So that's a serious possibility that could be true. It's also highly associated with testosterone, as males swear three times more than females. So it's indicative of a testosteronized brain. So we have a testosteronized brain, alpha male, up there essentially telling the story that he's not very smart and he's confused in the modern world with all the different milk, which is, of course, absurd. But by using the profanity and by keeping it very simple, he's cloaking it in an aura of believability that when he hits those punches with the profanity, it's hitting the circuit and he is in fact losing the faux status, indicating that he's not too smart, which is of course absurd, or he wouldn't be a stand-up comic in front of a big audience. And so that losing of the faux status tickles the neural circuits of the listeners and they enjoy it. So this is why that happened. Very good. Very clever and interesting.
Yeah, I'm sensing a theme here. You know, like so many of the articles we've done, after the first three, we can already see the writing on the wall about what exactly is happening.
Yeah. Sure. Let's hear the third one.
The third one is realism. So the author says most good jokes have to state some sort of bitter truth, which the audience can associate with. And so here's Louis C.K. It's the same comedian from the first clip. Yeah. Now he's talking about his daughter.
Got it.
My daughter is really something else, man. She runs the house. She runs the whole house. She decides everything. Like, we were playing hide and seek the other day. We play hide and seek, and we play by her rules that she invented. And do you know why? Because she sucks at hide and seek. And so she covers it with this fucking roof to level the playing field. And I gotta fucking pretend it's all that she's great. No, it's bullshit. Like, we're playing. Oh, fucking. I know she's a kid, but fucking listen. When it's my turn to hide, she tells me where to hide. She tells me where. She goes, hide in the closet, Papa. But you're gonna know where I hide in the closet. All right, fuck, I'll hide in the closet. Good, fine. Now I'm standing in the closet like an asshole. She comes in, I found you. She's like shitty about it. Like, I found you. And I'm like, wow. How did you figure out where you told me to fucking hide? And then when...
Yeah, so... Let me see if I get this, if I'm understanding this right.
Yeah, sure.
So he is losing status to his daughter, which obviously he's not, but he's playing to that.
Right. So he is, it's the fact that his daughter's in charge. Okay. So the status is that he's supposed to be dad. and dad's supposed to be in charge, and in fact, gee, he's not in charge, okay? So that's what's supposed to be funny. He tries to edge it in with the profanity, in other words, indicating his frustration that he, you know, that he's not in charge. I don't find it very funny. I think the only people that are laughing are drunk, and and so I think it was a bad set there, bad sequence. But you can see what he's trying to do. He's trying to sort of lose status as the person in charge, but it's not working. It's too ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. We're gonna find that in the first example was better. In other words, the doctor says his ankle's worn out. We don't quite believe it, but something like that could have happened, and it is possible. And so and in the second case, the guy swearing about the milk, yeah, that's sort of believable. It was delivered well. This one's mediocre, and that's because we don't believe that he's really frustrated about losing, quote, that he's in a role reversal with his kid. There should be no indication. He should not be frustrated with this. You obviously do this only because it's entertaining and fun and sweet to do, and so you would not be frustrated. So this is it's tickling a little bit, maybe, the idea of parents, you know, bending over backwards for their 3-year-olds and being frustrated about it. But I don't think it plays well. I think it's generally poorly conceived.
Okay, and it seems like he's also trying to display some of his agreeability versus his daughter's disagreeability.
Yeah, yes, a little bit. Yeah, it's as if he's frustrated with his daughter's disagreeability, which is, of course, ludicrous. So all of this is just this is comedians doing the best they can. These guys are operating on instinct rather than really understanding the structure of humor. And, you know, that's why it's fabulous and artistic as hell when they get it right. But a lot of times they're going to get it wrong.
Okay. Yeah, and the next one is actually I have this clip here with Eddie Izzard. Now, Eddie Izzard has a really different style of humor. He really likes to tell a big, long story, and he exaggerates a lot. He exaggerates so much that it's actually funny in some ways.
Yeah.
In this particular clip, I don't think he nails it on the head, but let's take a look here, see if we can listen.
Yeah. So we had empires. In Europe, we had empires. Everyone had France and Spain and Britain and Turkey, the Ottoman Empire, full of furniture for some reason. And the Austro-Hungarian Empire, famous for fuck all. Yes, all they did was slowly collapse like a flan in a cupboard. And the German Empire, very organized, always build an empire, Einstein, build an empire, very Prussian. And then they'd celebrate with the World War and then lose the whole fucking empire by the end of the war. Then the 30s, Hitler, Czechoslovakia, Poland, France, Second World War, Russian front, not a good idea. Hitler never played Risk when he was a kid. Because, you know, playing Risk, you could never hold on to Asia. That Asian, Eastern European area, you could never hold it, could you? 7 extra minutes at the beginning of every go, but you couldn't fucking hold it. Australasia, that was the one, Australasia. All the purples, get everyone on Papua New Guinea and just build up and build up. And Hitler ended up in a ditch covered in petrol on fire. So that's fun. I think that's funny. Because he was a mass...
Kind of a different style of humor.
Yeah, very clever, real cerebral. And actually, the inside jokes I found funny because I played Risk as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the things he was saying were absolutely true. And so, the beauty of this, some of the status loss here is fascinating. The status loss towards Hitler is that that essentially, had you played something as simple as Risk, you would have known not to get so greedy. And that's actually what he says. And so the i.e. a 14-year-old kid that had played, you know, 100 games of Risk would have not made the mistakes that you made, you freaking idiot. And and that is exactly what he's saying there. And so that tickles a circuit, because in a very different way than what I've described so far. And that is that because humor is centered around status loss, there's two ways you can lose status. Number one, you can lose real status, and number two, you can lose faux status. So when a comedian is up there losing status themselves, that's faux status. In other words, that's not real. It's no big status loss if this guy does have a worn-out ankle, okay? And we don't believe that the second guy has any problem in the grocery store aisle looking at all the different milk. So this is all bogus, okay? This is just all a way to paint a picture of their theoretical minimal weakness to drag them down to our level, and that process we enjoy inherently if they do it well. But in this case, Hitler is a hated figure in history. He's a despicable and hated figure. And he is hated because he was actually so effective. Had he been just an ineffective little tyrant that didn't really do anything, we wouldn't be talking about him. But the truth is he was terrifyingly effective, and he was unbelievably dangerous and brutal and extraordinarily costly. And so as a result of this, we actually want this guy to lose status, okay? Not faux status. We want him to lose the real thing. So what we do is we try to paint him into a corner and say, hey, you're a greedy, stupid fuck. You didn't play Risk as a kid? You should know you can't fight a two-front war. What an idiot, okay? When it's really not idiot, it's stupid greed, which is exactly what undermined Hitler, greedy stupid.
So disagreeable, so, along with intelligent.
Yeah.
Or a lack of intelligence.
That's right. So as a result, it is pleasurable to sit back after a dangerous bastard loses and say, hey, you're a stupid shit. Any idiot could have done that better than you did it. My 14-year-old kid could have done it better. And so that is what makes that part of that sequence funny, is he's going after he's got several little things in there. It's a complicated thing that he does, but a lot of clever, high cerebral issues. But I point out the issue of true status loss. But it's only funny if you are the in-group and they are the out-group, okay? So you have to really dislike the out-group, and you have to fear them, and you have to have a legitimate hatred of the out-group for them to lose status and for it to be funny, okay? Otherwise, it's not funny. And so I would bet that is not so funny probably to Germans or to, you know, we would probably find, if we were to test 1,000 Germans, that they wouldn't find some of this funny in the same way that say 1,000 Jews would find it funny. So there's going to be a historical in-group, out-group edge there, and he is playing on the side of it's fair game to take that guy down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
The next comic is Chris Rock, and the next essential ingredient to humor is emotion. And Chris Rock, he can be pretty funny sometimes. He's talking about marriage here and what happens when you get married and you visit other married couples. He's using emotion to play this along.
Married and bored or single and lonely. That's right. Marriage is some boring ass shit. Because once you get married, you got to hang around other married people. And that's just disgusting. You ever go to dinner with 6 neutered adults? A bunch of women talking about diaper genies and hair coloring. You know, if you leave it in too long, it stings. Shut the fuck up. A bunch of men talking about barbecue grills and routes to work. You know, sometimes I'll take the highway, but if it's backed up, I got some side streets I like to take. They get me there in half the time. Yeah, you should take it out. I-95 is clear sometimes. Shut the fuck up. I hate married people. It's fucking disgusting. If you go to eat dinner with single people eat for an hour and 30 minutes and leave because they got fucking to do. Married people close down a restaurant. They start ordering coffee and dessert, start talking to the architect. I like the thing you put right there in the thing. Start talking to the cook. Ooh, it's in the tea. Water, bitch. Hurry up. We got a lot of not fucking to do. If you hurry up, we can not fuck all night. Oh, I hate married fucking people, man. And fellas, once you get married, you become your wife's pet. You become a fucking pet. Because women like to get their husbands together that don't even know each other and have like a grown man play date. Put you in a room with some other married motherfucker and go, he likes baseball just like you. And you in some room with some fucking stranger going, I like baseball.
Well, I gotta tell you, this guy's one of the greats. This is actually really well conceived. If we start, you know, I'd have to listen to it 10 times to pull everything out of it. But what we're seeing is people. He's doing the following, and that is, married people are actually higher status in the culture than unmarried people. Okay, they make more money, more stable. They found somebody, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so when you think married, you think stable, financially better off. That's what you think. Okay, so therefore, they're absolutely fair game to cost them some status, and so it's totally fair game to go after them. I've heard people go after their marriage before, but I've never heard people go after married people just in general. You got to hand it to them. I mean, it is very, very interesting. All right.
And it sounded like he didn't lose too many married people because there wasn't that much status to be lost in the way that he was
right.
doing it.
Right. Exactly. So once again, we're losing faux status. And what he's there's elements of truth in here. So when you lose, whenever you're going to lose faux status, it has to have some believability to it. So the guy actually went to the doctor and his ankle's worn out, et cetera. The guy that did the milk thing spoke in a way that sounded like he was 90 IQ. And so, therefore, you could see him as potentially overwhelmed cognitively. So, and in Chris Rock's case, he's basically saying, wow, married people are non-sexual. And the men are emasculated, and which, of course, absolutely is true. That when males get in committed relationships, their testosterone levels drop dramatically. And so, this is undoubtedly part and parcel of an energy conservation mechanics inside the genetic code that just basically says no reason to huff and puff and show your muscles and do risky behavior and to grandstand for the females. You're with one, and so you're done for a while. And so this is and it's going to turn out that and I think it's hilarious. Play dates, in other words, you're basically saying. That the men are now domesticated as opposed to the exciting, intrepid human beings that they were before. And so this is the biggest, even though he's hammering on women, but actually in a very clever way that's inoffensive, because the truth of the matter is that he's signaling that the women are in charge of the marriages. Mm-hmm. And so this is this actually makes it much fairer for him to be hitting the whole structure and basically saying marriage, when that happens, the guys basically get their balls cut off. They're no longer real men. They get ordered around by their females. The whole thing turns into sexless pablum, and it's all about everybody getting along and being a little social club and talking about what women want to talk about. And so is there truth in this? Yeah, there is quite a bit of truth in it. And as a result, despite that, this is still a higher status place to be than to be single. And so as a result of this, you can get away with it. So therefore, his theoretical frustration is that he, quote, hates married people. But you generally don't hate things that are below you in socioeconomic status. That is not generally how human beings wouldn't feel that frustration. And so it all plays out that as if, and God forbid, if you're a married guy that is saying this, which Chris Rock may have been or may not have been, but the point is, either way, if he's married and he's saying this, then he's losing the status as he's doing it. If he's not married when he's doing it, he's basically dreading and fearing what is going to happen to his life when he becomes married, and that he's worried that he's going to be this emasculated, domesticated animal, and he hates looking at that prospect, because behind that prospect is a big reduction in sexual electricity, and he sniffs that as a potential inevitability in that situation. And so this is actually close to a masterpiece. And it's certainly not the best thing Chris Rock has ever done, but this is quite sophisticated adult humor. And what the hell? You know, this is why the guy is you know, on the big stage.
Very interesting. Now, for listeners who are worried about that happening when they actually do get married, or if they actually do get married, listen to a few of our other podcasts. Last time you mentioned a book called Mating in Captivity.
Yep.
By Esther Perel. So it might be worth a shot
we're not down on marriage here. We're just trying to be informed. All right, go ahead. Do we have any more?
The last one is surprise. So the author writes that surprise is one of the primary reasons why people laugh. Comedy is mentally pulling the rug out from under each person in your audience. But first, you have to get them to stand on it, and then you have to fool them, because if they see you preparing to tug on the rug, they'll move. So this is just a very short clip by Jerry Stahl talking about his addiction to heroin.
Yeah.
All right, I'll just let the cat out of the bag now and say I was a heroin addict for a little while. And this is a story about how in the early 90s, I made the decision to try and get off heroin by doing crack. Controversial method. It's not been approved by drug czar General McCaffrey at this point, but it made sense.
Yes. Bob, are you there?
Yeah, so he says he's managed to break his addiction to heroin by switching to crack.
Right. And again, now let's look at this. He talks about in the 90s, so it's a while ago. And so now he's up on a stage, clearly, you know, healthy, relaxed. Also using the words, the funniest laugh in here was when he said a controversial, you know, technique. And because someone that was being that highbrow, that articulate about this, is such a bizarre juxtaposition to talking about being a heroin or crack addict. And the biggest laugh was not actually the surprise factor of the heroin to crack. It was actually the phrase that when he says controversial. And the reason is that this is where the audience actually gets a relief in an interesting way. where they are a little, it's a little unsettling to listen to this guy. We're not sure what to believe about this. This is certainly not true. He did not try to get off heroin from crack, but we are a little disturbed about any human being that has done both heroin and crack. Those are essentially two of the worst, most addictive, most brutal substances that anybody could ever get into. And so we're a little concerned about him. But when he says, controversial tech strategy or whatever he says about this, this gets us to relax. There's actually a relief that goes on that now we kind of don't believe it, for one thing, because it's too articulate and too measured and intelligent. And it also signals to us that he is clearly none the worse for wear, because he's got a smooth articulation, highbrow delivery, that there's been no brain damage that anybody can see, and that it's got a sort of distanced and humorous light air to it. So this is, I think that what you're seeing is considerable relief in the audience, relieved that, so where the status loss in here is, I'm a little confused. I have to think this through a little bit more. But anyway, there's some elegant lines in here, Nate, that are hidden from view, and we'd have to pick through it a little more carefully. But yeah, I think that some of this is relief.
Mm-hmm.
Actually. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. The psychology of humor I'm just kind of thinking through it now I can see that the way you're thinking about it is you're actually paying attention to when the audience laughs the most. That's a really insightful way of looking at it.
Yes. This is tricky business, and there are evolutionary theorists who believe that the sense of humor may have been selected as number one. We actually recognize that men are overwhelmingly the generators of humor. Not that females can't generate humor, but it does not have the sexual cachet for women than it does for men, and certainly a lot of, it's not like the female brain can't generate humor. Of course it can. But it probably has those characteristics, not because it's useful for a female, but it would be extremely useful. Those genes are active, and you could pass those on to your sons, and then it could really help your son's mating situation. Sense of humor is an important characteristic that females look for in potential mates. Now, there's another angle to this, and that is that it is hypothesized that this is a method by which less robust physical males have been able to actually take shots at bigger, stronger males that would be otherwise physically dominant to them. And find a way to chisel away at those men's status, and thereby elevate the weaker man's status in the mating community relative to the strong man's status. And so this is another avenue of sexual competition, and some of us think. That this may be how this got selected for this kind of sensitivity and talent at looking for ways to take down people, not necessarily brutally, but just point out a little foible that may cost them a little bit, but not too much, not enough to get beat up, not enough to get injured, but just enough to take a little bit of the shine off the guy who is 3 inches taller and 30 pounds stronger than you. Just find some little quirky characteristic, and we're going to point that out in some upside-down way that's going to be clever and have the females laugh and therefore raise our status by the fact that the alpha dog lost a little. So that's probably part and parcel of the evolutionary history of this characteristic.
Fantastic. Well, let's go laugh at some jokes and maybe make some more of our own.
Cool. Good. We'll talk.
Thanks, Dr. Lyle.
My great pleasure, and we'll see you real soon, Nate.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G. and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.